Okay, here we are. It is it's Sunday. It's January 15th. Nicholas Allen Bob, Bo Robert Roode. We got to get this in because both you and I are going to be road warriors. You more so than me. You are heading out of the country for an extended period of time. We might be able to get into that at the end of the pod if you want to.
You're going down under.
You're going to New Zealand. Now, your wife's family's from New Zealand, so she's already there. You're going to meet her there. You're going to be there for a handful of weeks. It would be fun if we somehow could record a pod from New Zealand.
So,
what's the time change? What would that be?
It's today's Sunday here.
Okay.
It's Monday there, but like if it's 4:40 here, it's like 11:40 there. Okay. 5 hours early. So basically, we could say like you could say noon here would be five there on the next day.
Okay.
Or five here and 11 right. there yeah, on yeah, the next yes. day. And we could sync it up. So
we should do that.
It should be able to work. So
we should do that. I will say, you know, because I wrote this down I think everybody should go out of the country at some point. Like I do think it's good to get out there and see the world, experience another country. But like now that I've done it, I don't know if I have a huge desire to do it again. There's maybe a couple places, like I do want to see Italy, but I don't. Once you've done it, I did London, I did Dublin, I did Paris, like I've done that. I don't know if I have a huge desire to go see anywhere else. We did Barcelona.
So my whole thing with traveling, I've changed the way I travel over the last handful of years where I'm not a hopper arounder. I don't want to see a thousand things.
I hate it.
I like to see the one thing a lot. So like when we do trips, like, you know, like our honeymoon, this is where we first started doing this. You know, we went to Paris for a honeymoon and, you know, you could see all these different places and
right.
people said, you got to go to the West Coast of Normandy. You got to go here. You got to do it. And I was like, okay, 2 days there. I was planning out. Then I went, no, I'm not doing that. I said, 9 days, Paris. Staying in here. I'm going to see this place, right?
That's how I would do it.
And same way with here. Like, we're going to New Zealand. There's a bunch of cities to go to. We're going to my wife's family's, like, little farm and little beach houses. And we're going.
Right.
We're not leaving the small town, essentially. We're staying here for a couple of weeks. Like, you get to be at the place. That's the way I like to travel.
That's unfortunate. No big shock. Me and you agree on something.
What?
That's how I like to do it too. I don't want to bounce around, do a bunch of different things. Because I did that. You know, I've done that. Maybe you need to do that.
Because you know why? Do you know why? Traveling sucks.
It does.
Being somewhere is awesome.
Yes.
So some people want to bounce every day. That means you got to repack your bags, check out of the hotel. Catch your transportation. Transportation sucks.
Right.
Check into a hotel or find, you know, like
right.
catch a cab, unpack, get like that part of travel. I'm like, that's the worst part of it. So
and
do
it gets,
the least of that.
And you know, you're at a stage in your life with your youngest daughter where like you guys are still at the point where you can go do those things. Like, I feel like it also gets harder to like, you're not going to go to, yeah, I'm going to go to Paris just for 3 days. Like, you got to go, like, so it's, and the older you get, the harder it gets to find, like, multiple weeks or a long enough stretch for it to be worth it, but.
Yeah, and the multiple kids makes it also.
Oh, Lord, like, have mercy.
Ooh, baby.
Lord, yeah. have mercy.
Yeah, a place with family is, it's kind of a freebie for us. Like,
yeah.
Hey, you don't have to, you get help, you got places to stay.
Yes.
You know, they're letting us use their cars.
Oh, my gosh. Are they opposite side of the road people?
They are.
Oh, man, that's got to be. And so then the steering wheel's on the other side?
It is. No.
That
it,
is.
The last time I was there with my wife, this was 5 years ago, she did all the driving because I was a little bit like, I have no desire right now to do this first.
Why would
drive.
It would feel very weird.
I mean, you'd feel like you're breaking the law.
Well, and you'd feel like you're just going to get into a head-on collision. Like, it just wouldn't feel right. But why couldn't everybody get on the same page, whether it's the metric system with or it's
the
road.
Was
like,
it us?
What?
Was it us? Did we beer or did they beer?
I would say we probably beer.
I
know, but.
But you know what? Left seems good.
It
left
does.
Side of the road.
It seems like the more natural side of the road to be on.
Yeah, and we probably should have did metric, but you know what? It's 100 yards. The field's 100 yards.
It does feel good. It does feel good. 100 yards, a football field. That brings us to football and why we're here. I have a bunch of stuff I'm going to throw at you. Just want to react to it. Some of the stuff I've given my thoughts on, like the young staff, I recorded a pod on that. I want to pick your brain on that. But real quick, I want to start with this. Marcus Satterfield, the offensive coordinator, because I haven't talked about this. Both coordinators had a big press conference, and they talked to the press. And Marcus Satterfield made fans, every Husker fan was just, he had them drooling because Marcus Satterfield said they're going to be a pro-style offense, they're going to huddle up, they're going to use the fullback, and they are going to run the football.
Yeah.
I guess your initial reaction to hearing that was what?
The fact that he was so adamant about the huddle, I like people that have like a pretty strong stance. You know what I mean? He's like,
okay, yeah, all right. Because I was going to ask you about the huddle.
He's
thing.
He's going to die on that
on the huddle hill.
On the huddle hill, and I go, I like somebody that dies on the huddle hill. You know,
I do like people that have like really strong opinions on things that you maybe shouldn't have that strong of an opinion
like
on.
It's
it.
Small. Like, it seems like it's a huddle. Some people do so. He's like, huddling's important. I'm like, you have my vote.
I do agree with that. I do agree with that. Well, let's start there and then we'll expand on it. Like, I will say I've never critically thought about the huddle and not huddling and its impact on football and all that stuff. Like, do you, because he, I think the exact word he goes, I'm on a crusade with the huddle. He talked about how it's kind of the core and the essence of football.
Yeah.
He got into how can we ask a quarterback to be a vocal leader and you never huddle?
Yeah.
Do any of those things resonate with you?
Yeah, I think the huddle does, like, it's one of those things, like, it's sort of like, it's like a reset. It brings everybody together. Communication's better. There's little moments in those huddles. Like, little, you know,
right,
things that can be exchanged, little quick tidbits you might need just to get some information. I just think it's maybe one of those things that it brings you like a sense of balance. It brings you a sense of calm, and I always think it's like it helps you make less mistakes potentially or something.
Yeah, I agree. Like, again, it's hard because I've never not huddled, so I wish I could compare it the two of. But you do think it is a team that is never huddling. I mean, think about a drive. Think about a 12-play drive where you never huddle up.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thought because there is something to being able to, I do believe, like I always felt like, especially being a quarterback, like a huddle like was my time.
Yeah.
For everybody, because I always felt like I had to be, and I had to be the beacon of confidence. People, I had to be sure of myself. I had to make sure that all sets of eyes, when they looked at me, I was in total control and they could believe in me. And I wonder if that's kind of what Marcus Satterfield's getting at a little bit with, like, you know, how do you cultivate leadership when in a big moment, you're not, there isn't those moments where everybody's huddled in tight, looking at each other and feeling each other right next to each other.
There's no communication in the same way. Like, if you're always just going to the line,
turning and looking,
and you're looking, everybody's looking, it's just a different, it's a little bit different of a feel where I think there's more on-field ownership if it's like called into the quarterback.
Yes.
The quarterback's delivering and everybody's sort of like, all right. It's like, it gives you that count to kind of like, with your team.
Right.
Take a second. Now we go. So it definitely slows the game down. You can't be
right
super fast like, you know, we've been seeing the last few years.
I like little things, like little reminders to, like, as a quarterback, like if I called a play and it was something I wanted to remind something on.
Yeah.
Like, you can't in a no huddle, it's harder to do that, even with a receiver. You know, like you could maybe, like,
yeah, like
little things.
Linemen too. I think linemen, like, they get that chance when they're in the huddle to say a few things to each other.
Right.
And they're even that, like, walk back up to the, like, to the line, then they're like, it's right, a different perspective. I think I like it for linemen better myself.
Well, and you know, this is, and here's, I can't believe it, because sometimes I get tired of, or when I'll listen to other podcasts and people will, like, you know, like somebody that never like played is referencing like pickup basketball and somehow correlating that to like the NBA finals. And you're like, not quite the same.
Yeah.
And so I feel like I'm doing that with like my high school football career, like to college. But like, I felt like, and now we had an offensive lineman, a few offensive linemen, one of which, one of our buddies, Matt Mullen, was very impressionable.
Yeah. Yeah.
It didn't take a lot to get Mullen crunk and ready to kill somebody. But even like I liked as a quarterback, third and one, yeah, we're running a 42 dive or something. We're running an ISO right over Mullen. And before I call the play, I could get in Mullen's face or into the offensive lineman and just give him like, blow this motherfucker up. You understand me?
Yeah.
It's a yard. You know, something like that. Like those little moments where, and then, you know, looking him in the eye like, hey, we're coming over you, big boy. This is you. Big play. You got it.
Because like, it's, things like that. In the end, football's still a game of like, it's about like, toughness. Yes. It's a game of being physical toughness. It's emotion, and it's like those intangible human things still make the difference. And I think you just get a little bit more away from that when it's just like we're going to the line and we're just right. like, and the coach calls it, and you're just look at the card and go. Like
right.
it's a little less like of that. When you do it that way,
yes.
a little less of that human aspect of it. Or something.
Well, sometimes I think, yeah, it's like there's playing the, it goes back to playing the sport versus playing the game. Like you get the play, you go run the play. That's playing the sport. Like the huddle allows you to think the game more a little bit. Like, you know, just reminders. Like I know little things like, hey, Anthony Grant, it's third and one. Like just a little thing like, all right, hey, 54 ISO on two. Anthony, hey, AG, we need a yard. Like little things just to remind him, like, we need a yard.
Stay in the hole.
We need a yard.
Yeah. Don't bounce it.
Don't bounce this shit. We need a yard. Like, those are the things I always felt like as a quarterback, I could, like, just little reminders.
Yeah, like, or, you know, on two, do, like, guys, yeah, we're
going on two, do not jump.
Do not jump, or, like, just talk. Those. I feel like for the line, that's got to be good. I mean, I've obviously never played line in my life, but I just know, like, those guys have a lot of different fronts they're dealing with.
Yes.
A lot of different potentials. And the more that those guys can be cohesive and work together better, that is the base of it all on your offense.
Right. The Nick Bob Podcast is powered by Runza, and the cold winter months, it's officially here. And as a warm weather lover myself, the cold can kind of bum me out. But the one thing that always puts a huge smile on my face when it gets cold, Temperature Tuesdays at Runza. Yes, it's that time of the year. Temperature Tuesdays are back at Runza, where every Tuesday in January and February, the 6 a.m. temperature at the coldest Runza location is the price you'll pay for an original Runza sandwich when you buy a medium fry and medium drink. Think about it. An original Runza sandwich might be 10 cents, a dime, might be a nickel, might be a quarter, heck, might even be one penny. Just one penny. So make sure you take advantage of this incredible deal every single Tuesday at Runza, where the temp at 6 a.m. in Runza land is the price you pay for an original Runza sandwich and you buy a medium fry and a medium drink. It's back, baby. Temperature Tuesdays. Runza makes it all better. Random thought here. I want to say, first of all, like before I say this, like I like it. I like what Marcus Satterfield said. Yeah. I agree. You and I have been kind of, I've always kind of felt like this was the offense that Nebraska needed to run. They need to get under center. They need to huddle up. They need to run the ball, all those things. So I'm very happy about this. But is it kind of odd for Matt Rhule to hire Tony White? He runs the 3-3-5, but we might not run the 3-3-5. Mm-hmm. And to hire Marcus Satterfield, where he was more of a, you know, shotgun, air it out, throw the ball guy, but we're not going to run that. We're going to do something else. Yeah. Is that kind of odd? Like, I feel like I don't want to be Johnny Negative here out the gates, but I'm like, is that kind of weird to hire these coordinators and then might not run what they ran?
Well, I think the defensive one is more, I think, straightforward. Like, they probably will run it if they have the personnel. If they don't have the personnel, they're going to fit it to the... But the offense, it almost sounds like they are trying to not do the thing that he was doing.
Which
you
is,
know? Like, they, I mean, but that might be a Matt Rhule thing, that it's more Matt Rhule, what Matt Rhule wants here.
Yeah, and that's
right.
And like, again, it's like what's hard is I like what Matt Rhule wants.
Yeah.
But I think it's just interesting to me to not go hire, like, I want to run pro style. I'm going to go hire a guy that didn't run pro style.
Yeah, but I guess did this guy, was he a part of the teams with Rhule when they did run more of a pro style? I think he probably was.
Yeah,
so.
He's been with him. So it's not completely foreign to him.
They ran it together. So that could also be like maybe Satterfield had more like had more from his last head coach to say, hey, we wanna be a
I think
a
it's
spread
just
team.
I just that's something that just struck me where
it's a little different.
It's
isn't
a little
it?
Interesting because yeah. when you hire a coordinator, you are hiring them because they have proven to be good at something, that whatever system that is.
Yeah.
So you go, I want you to come over here and do that. And that's kind of not what this totally is. Not saying it can't
different.
Work. And
I do like that it's about like Rhule's vision for fitting
right,
it to his players
here.
And, you know, like I said, what we need to do to win games. So I think they're on the right track. I feel like so far I'm going to give them the pass of like, this is passing my smell test. I'm fine. There's no big like, oh, this seems like a mistake. It doesn't feel that.
No, I don't feel that way either. And again, I agree with like how they're approaching it. I felt like that was interesting to be.
And
like,
he said huddle,
and
which
he said huddle.
That's all it huddle. Really took in the end of the day.
It's funny. It's funny though. He did say that, and it made me kind of like I never critically thought about the huddle, but the more I thought about it, I was like, yeah, you know, like there is a lot of benefits to the huddle.
Well, I mean, I was on a crusade for almost 4 years where like. They get to the 1-inch yard line, they would take a shotgun snap. I mean, that's the kind of thing like I go on crusades about. Like
right.
The little things that you can't, there's no argument you can make that makes me understand things like that.
Right.
Like, you got to get an inch. It's really hard to defend an inch as a defender. The only thing you can do when you go into shotgun is give the defense an advantage. They get 3 seconds to get a push, to get penetration,
right.
and to get a chance to make a play. If you're under center, gosh, it's hard. It's hard to stop an inch.
Right.
And we couldn't get an inch a lot. That's the part of the problem. It's like, God, what a mistake.
I'm trying to think if there's anything I'm on a crusade about. I'm on a crusade. I would say I'm pretty staunch in my belief of always putting someone on the ball in a length of the floor, like a Leitner situation. Like, I'm big on put someone
guard
on
the ball.
Because the pass has to be perfect. And if you put your biggest motherfucker
it's
on
hard
the ball, I would say I'm big on that.
That's a good point because I think unless you've been a person that has to do an inbound where you have a huge long-armed person like
going crazy.
It's hard to throw it anywhere, let alone like a long, perfect pass.
The pass makes the shot in all of those situations.
Yeah.
Worry about the pass.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like don't get too caught up in the back end. But that's also, this isn't a crusade. I'm on a pet peeve. If I see one more person in a basketball game, when they intentionally miss a free throw, not hit the rim, like they missle it off the backboard, and then they do that like, oh, shit, that's right, I got to hit the rim. Oh.
That's because they're bad basketball players.
Like, I literally,
you,
like,
do you know
are
what that is?
Off the team.
Do you know what that comes from? That comes from people that are good athletes that play AAU, and they know how to, like, become a top prospect. They never got good at basketball. Like, they didn't spend, like, 60,000 hours at the
watching
rec,
it
having
thinking,
to like
yeah.
play games and become really good at basketball.
I just don't. And the Villanova guy did it on Friday, and I literally wanted to take off my headset and like go on the court and be like, go to your room.
Okay.
I
got another crusade. Now that you're saying, okay, end of game plays. Okay. This is a new phenomenon over the last handful of years. Like there's 5 seconds or 10, like whatever the time is.
Okay.
The amount of people that will, okay, it's 5 seconds and we're on their own 20 and we just gotta, and they throw it to somebody and they like, just like accept the tackle. Or they like turn
yeah.
and like run upfield and get tackled. Like They're not playing keep away. They're right. not fumbling the ball to right. keep it alive. Like, they're willing to concede the game.
Like,
or they don't really understand the situation. Like, that happens so frequently now.
It does.
It tells me they don't understand how to play, like, football. Or they don't understand, like, on the playground, if that were the situation, you're just...
You're lateraling it. You're or fumble. Like, just...
You fumble. Gotta, like, you never accept a tackle, ever.
It is weird. It is weird how guys get just like, oh, I got tackled.
And I'd say it's a majority of the time now.
Right.
Like, almost every time I'm going, why are they not
yeah, I'm playing... Yeah, that's a good crusade.
It's that might be my biggest one.
That is, yeah, more that, than you have talked about that for a while.
It drives me...
It does.
Insane.
Yeah, it drives me crazy. To me, it's the free throw thing. And everybody's like, oh, my bad. Like, what do you mean, my bad? What do you mean? You know it has to hit the rim.
It's got to hit the rim, yeah. Like,
it just drives me crazy.
And you should practice it.
Yeah, I mean, yes.
You shoot 1,000 free throws. Right. Like, shoot 10.
Like, you know who was good at it? Luka Doncic was good at it. He missed it, was able to go to where it was supposed to go. I don't know if you saw that play. Yeah. And he, like, got it in and went to, he had, like, 60 in the game.
He's good at
it. Like, well, Luka knew how to do it. Mm, interesting how yeah, he knew how to do it. But idiots don't know how to do it. Real quick, I want to pick your brain. We were texting about it. I got a long pot about it, but I want to get your thoughts. The young staff, very, very, it's a little head-scratching. You know, you hear $7 million pool for assistant coaches. You conjure up an idea of what that staff would look like. I mean, a lot of these guys that got hired, I'm not sure they would have been hired by FCS schools to...
No, I don't think that necessarily... I think the two coordinators
yes,
are like...
Yes, the two coordinators I'm good with. Like,
they're making like $1.2 million each or right. something like that? Like, right. holy crap.
Yeah, they're doing a thing. Yeah, I mean, Marcus Satterfield...
Good for them.
Right.
The last staff's probably going like, yeah, shoot, we... We missed the
$7 million
here.
Pool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. But yes, I'm with you. The coordinator. This is more of like a position coach.
The position
thing.
Coaches guy. Here's. I really think they're like these are Matt Rhule's guys. They're young, energetic, can recruit, and Matt Rhule's saying, "I'll handle the rest."
Right.
And like, I mean, the 23-year-old's the one. That's like, whoa, that's young.
Garrett McGuire. He's 23 years old. He turns 24 next month. I mean, say it, a 24-year-old wide receiver coach at Nebraska. And, you know, we were texting about it, and I talked, like, that's a diva position group. That is a lot of mouths to feed.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, I mean, you know, you got Garrett McGuire. You got Bob Wager or Wager. I need to figure out how to, he was a Texas high school coach. He's the tight ends coach.
So that this is where the two... So those two people, I think, that are kind of the newest hires, which people are kind of like, they're like, ooh. Huh? So the young kid is a played quarterback for him. They say he's real smart. So he's a yep. smart quarterback from Texas. His dad, I believe,
Joey McGuire, the Texas Tech head coach.
Texas Tech head coach, right? Yep. So that's one thing, right? This other guy is a high school football coach. He was head of the Texas High School Football Association.
Yeah.
So that tells me Matt Rhule... most likely is saying, I'm going to recruit the crap
yeah.
out of Texas. And these two guys have unique connections. So the young guy, maybe less recruiting connections, but like he's going to know a lot about Texas high school football.
Right.
His dad's recruiting. He's going to be plugged in.
Agree.
But the other guy, my guess, if you go from high school to that job to Nebraska, he has real connections.
Yes.
Okay. And obviously being the...
And he's probably being the head of the Texas High School Football Coach Association, whatever it is. Like,
those are the connections.
You're the gatekeeper in some ways, you know?
Yes, like, and so he has...
Billy Bob Thornton in Friday Night Lights or... I don't even know who...
What's his name? Angelina Jolie's dad. John...
John Lovitz?
No.
Or not. John... John Lovitz. John... no, he's not John.
It is. It's John. Not Grisham.
John Grisham, the client. God, what is?
Oh shoot! Come on.
Oh my God, this is ridiculous. Angelina Jolie.
No, his name was Midnight. He won an Oscar for
John Voight.
John Voight. There we
Lovitz.
Go. John Lovitz. John Grisham.
So John Starks.
John Grisham. In Friday Night Lights, or known in Varsity Blues.
Yeah, yeah.
He was kind of the same way. He kind of ran, you know.
Yes.
I see this guy being
So that's exactly right. You know, then they have Rob Dvorak, the linebackers coach. He's only 28 years old. He doesn't have any Power 5 experience. E.J. Barthel is a running backs coach. He's got zero Power 5 experience. He's only 38. Terrence Knighton, 36 years old, zero Power 5 experience, only 1 year as a position coach. Evan Cooper's under the secondary coach. He's under 40. And then we've talked about Donovan Raiola. The one thing, because I'm with you, like I think he thinks, like, I'm going to hire these young guys. These young guys got a ton of energy. They'll go do whatever I can tell them, like, dude, you got to go to Texas, and you're going to be there hitting a million places or whatever. But one of the things about recruiting, I always viewed recruiting a little bit like, while it does take a lot of, it helps to be younger and energetic. I always thought recruiting was more about connections and experience too.
I was felt like, you know, to me, I always thought like the thing about like Mickey Joseph, had the, like, he earned his way up through all of those Louisiana Southern schools. Right. And then he was like, oh, and then I got Jamar Chase, and I got, like,
right.
His selling point was, look who I coach,
right,
and what I did.
And it took,
you know,
years of connections, years of building that.
It took 30 years for Mickey Joseph to get that job. This guy's 23.
So that, I guess that's the one thing. It's like, I don't think there's any doubt that maybe Garrett McGuire, whoever these young guys, when they get on the, like, in just connecting with another young person, yeah, they could probably connect better than Johnny 62-year-old. But at the same time, or a Mickey Joseph, like, maybe just in straight up being able to connect, because, like, a lot of it is just kind of texting with them and talking to them. And but there is that point where, like, your connections, your track record, all those things take over, and I feel like supersede the ability to, like, just connect with someone. I don't know. I'm just,
yeah, I think there's some of that. I mean, I guess those guys, they have the they got the Baylor, they got the Baylor Temple / Carolina Panthers. You know, I still think that the NFL thing's got some cachet. Like,
for sure.
We just came from the pros, this is what you got to do. I think that will, they'll have a couple years where they got some cachet for that. But yeah, I mean, if you're just looking at resumes, like, these are very inexperienced resumes.
Yeah.
For the non-coordinator.
Which, I mean, I'm not going to, here's the thing that you say this all the time. We're like, if we like the coach, we don't get upset about certain things. When the coach starts losing, then other things become a problem.
Yeah.
Like, what's hard is, everybody criticized Bo Pelini for hiring his boys and maybe some inexperienced guys. Same thing with Frost. Like, his staff was too, I don't like that he brought his guys with him and that they were inexperienced. Like, well, if it was a problem for them and it's not a problem for Rule, like, we're just admitting our biases of, like, it's who's in charge right now. Like, I mean, I'm concerned. Like, I would say the position coach is, like, I'm not, it might work. It might be fine. I would just, I'm scratching my head a little bit at it.
It's weird because they're like, I'm not saying that these guys aren't good coaches.
No,
and I'm not saying that these guys can't get the job done. But it's also like, it's almost clear, like, this is a Matt Rule philosophy almost. Like,
yeah,
his guys, young guys, versus, like, guys that might not be quote unquote his guys that have a lot more experience. Like, he's clearly saying that's what he wants,
right?
And it's putting a lot on him. And so I don't think that there's any, like, 2 years, he just needs to now hire. We weren't good, but now he just needs to hire, like, you know, some better coaches. He didn't realize that those guys weren't up to snuff or something. Like, there should be none of that. Like, Matt Rule's been the pro, like, he's been around the block
enough. He should know
now.
A good coach.
He should know what he needs to do. Like, we didn't just pay this guy $8 million or whatever for him to not know what he needs in a coach, right? I think that's where a younger Scott Frost, I feel like a less experienced Scott Frost, I give him a little bit that he didn't really couldn't see it or didn't know what he needed, and he kind of had to be told, like, after 4 years, like,
you need these this, guys. Yeah.
These guys are not good enough. We need somebody else, right? Like, I don't know that that's the case with Matt Rhule. It's almost like Matt Rhule is acknowledging that these are your young and experienced, but they're my guys. This is what I want, and this will be good.
Right.
So it's a little different that I feel like Matt Rhule knowingly is doing it, where Scott Frost maybe wasn't knowingly doing it.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, and I don't know. You try to kind of crawl into the mind of Rhule with some of this stuff of like, you wonder if he's sitting there going like, he doesn't seem with any of these hires to be outsourcing anything. Like, turning like, you handle this. The Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors, and I want to talk to you guys about energy efficiency. And if you go onto Pella's website right now, you look at it, and how about this? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different types of windows or doors by Pella won the Energy Star 2020 Most Energy Efficient Award. That's big time stuff right there. And they achieved that in a couple of waves. They got insulated glass, which slows the heat transfer, keeping your home at a more comfortable temperature. They got types of low E glass, which is a glass coating that has been optimized for your climate. They got triple pane glass, which you can upgrade to for increased insulating airspace. And within all of that, one of the keys is proper installation, which is key for window and doors to perform at their best. And you know the Pella experts are excellent at that. Bottom line, energy efficiency matters in making your home more comfortable, and Pella Windows and Doors are at the top of the line when it comes to energy efficiency. Check them out online, PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. You handle that.
Yeah.
It's kind of like it almost strikes me as a staff, he's going to, and you're the head coach, you should probably micromanage all of it, but it strikes me as a staff, he's going to have to micromanage. I think he wants to basically control, and again, you're the head coach, you should, but at the same time, like, a part of being, when you get to a certain level, is like, you can just kind of say, here, Coach X, like, you handle this.
Yep.
Does that make sense? Like, I don't know if that's good or bad.
Sometimes it's like this. I'm the head coach. I'm an offensive guru. Right. I'm going to hire the defensive guru, and I really don't want to know anything about it. Just go do it.
I'm going to trust you to go do that.
And I think Matt Rhule is saying, look, I believe that I'm good at coaching all coaches.
Yes.
Across the board. So I want my guys. And it puts more on him.
Yes.
But that means he believes he's good enough at, like, coaching the coaches, right?
Right.
Which is another skill, I would say, that Scott Frost had less interest in.
Right.
Than I think Matt Rhule's initially showing that he does.
I think he has a lot of interest in coaching coaches.
I think he may be good at it, and I think his hires tell me that's what he's doing.
I couldn't agree more. Like, this staff tells me that Matt Rhule is going to be, there's going to be very little, like, okay, Dvorak's got that at the linebacker. You know, Garrett McGuire's got the wide receiver thing. We don't got to worry about that. We don't, like, no. Like, he's going to have his hands in all of that. And I just kind of feel like maybe that's how he wants it. It just seems like he's making it harder than it maybe needed to be. That's why I'm like,
I don't know, but if it's hard. For him, it might not be harder. For him, it might be like, this is how I like to do it. I want moldable coaches. I want young guys that I'm like, this is how you coach.
Right.
I know you. You played for me. You know what I expect. Like, I think that's a part of it. You know, where, like, you know, sometimes you get butting heads. I mean, even let it whip.
Yeah, like,
you know, he was on the same page always with the head coach, and that's part of you know, when you outsource and you turn it over to a degree, it's like,
when you outsource, you better be willing to let go. And maybe Rhule realizes he knows himself well enough to be like, I need to have my hands in all of this. And that's fine.
Or if you outsource, you better have a lot of faith that they're an expert. And you got, because you do have to trust and let go then, because if you don't know how to coach it better, it's hard to micromanage.
Agree.
Where I think Rhule, it's showing me Rhule's more of a, he's more of a, like, He thinks he's got experience in most things, and I think he's going to have his hands in a lot of it.
Yeah. Next thing. There was news that surfaced, I think it was last week, that Xavier Betts may be returning to Nebraska. Now, again, we're taping this. It's January 15th. I'm not sure if anything official has been announced. What are your thoughts on it? Because, like, him leaving, I viewed it as, like, Xavier Betts didn't really love football. He kind of just wanted to be done with football. So it's interesting. I never thought it was anything to do with, like, the staff or anything like that.
No.
So it's interesting for him to now want to come back. Maybe a year away from football has made him realize, like, how much he missed it or something.
Well, I'd say it's more than just, like, I don't think he loves football. I think he's a guy that, like, is very talented.
Right.
Is he a guy that's bad to have in the team with his talent? No. I mean, sure. Like, maybe he'd give him another shot. The problem is like, I think you step away from football and you realize, like, okay, I had a scholarship to go to Nebraska. They feed me. They house me.
They help me with my class schedule. They help me with setting my class schedule with where, if I'm on track academically, like all that stuff.
Yeah. Like, and so
they help,
like,
you with everything.
And so you go, man, I don't really love the game. So I'm burnt out on it. And then you go, all right, well, where do you want to work if you want to get an education? Or do you just want to go to work? And then you go, oh, they don't hire people without degrees. And then you go, and then you can't get a job, or you're working a job and you realize, like, oh, I was playing football and going to school and having fun, and now I can make money doing all those things. It's like, I think the stepping away can maybe be healthy for a guy like that, because you go work maybe he's like, he got a job at,
whatever.
Name the place. He's working at an insurance firm, and he's like, gosh, this is not as fun as football.
Right. Well, and you also maybe realize the one thing that is true is, like, you know, there's that whole cliche about it's not always just a 4-year decision on where you go to college and play football or basketball, but it's really a 40-year decision. Especially places like Nebraska, you graduate and you're a former football player. Yeah. The state wants to help you. It wants to hire you. Yes. It wants to see you be successful even after life. And there could be, I'm just spitballing here, maybe there could have been an element of, like, man, okay, if I'm going to live in Nebraska, do I want to be the guy that quit the Nebraska football team? That's probably not, like, also in my best interest for, you know, my future moving forward and all those sorts of things. But
it is like one of the big selling points I would tell recruits that come here is, like, look, you come here and you play, like, you always got a home here.
Yes.
Like, people in Nebraska love their Huskers. They love them. They do. Like, we all do. Like, if me and you were hiring and these two people are equal and that guy used to play for Nebraska, I'm probably hiring that guy.
Right.
I am. And that might not sound fair, but that's how the world
reality
works. Because we experienced that thing together. I mean, we've gone through that. You know, we all shared in that. That's the big part of life in Nebraska. I mean, I go to work and you know what we talk about at work a lot of times?
Yeah.
You talk about Husker football. That's like the lifeblood of our community.
Right. Yeah.
So, like, you'll always have a place if you go through the university and you play your butt off, people will welcome you all over the state.
I think I do think if I'm Matt Rhule, I do a lot of research on this though. Like, I really try to figure out, you know, sit Xavier Betts down, like, okay, what, like, all the stuff we're kind of talking about. Tell me, I want to, you know, what was it that made you want to walk away from things last year? I'm just curious. What have you been doing for the last handful of months? What did you learn over the last handful of months? Like, I'd even maybe ask the guys. Now, it's a lot of newcomers, but I'd even maybe ask some of the guys that were his teammates how they feel about it.
Yeah,
because I will say, like, I don't know. Like, once you, like, we can paint this however we want. Like, he quit on the team. And once you quit, like, there's a weird thing, like, in sports, team sports, like, you quit on us.
Yeah, you got to earn it back. If you want to get, like, there's it can be earned back.
Oh, for sure.
But, man, I'll tell you what, I'm with you. Like, if you're a quitter, I kind of expect you to quit again.
Right. That's what I wrote down. You quit once, it's way easier to quit again. When this shit gets tough, are you going to quit again? When we're waking up at 6 and we're in winter, you know, and it's conditioning and stuff. Are you going to quit again?
Yeah.
Or what?
Because, like, I think there's reasons why people quit that are, you know, I think more understandable. And I don't know.
And that's right. I don't know this
kid. I don't know this kid. But it seemed like the message was, I just don't really like it.
Yeah. And
like, I don't like the game.
Right.
Like,
that was always what my, he's like, oh, he's not really a football guy. He doesn't love it.
And me and you have played enough in both football and basketball. Yeah. Like, we know, like, there were a lot of guys that, like, they didn't really love basketball. It's like, they just were born 7 feet.
Yes.
And, like, it's like pulling teeth to get them to do the team thing sometimes. Yes. And being on a team is a special thing. Sacrificing is hard. And when a lot of people do it and one person doesn't, it's almost not, you got to be so freaking unbelievably talented right. to be worth dealing with the guy yes. not do. So he is very talented. If he's a good kid, which I don't think he's a bad kid. I think he's a good kid.
Yeah.
If he's reinvigorated and he's ready to earn it back, I think they'll welcome him back.
I do too. And here's the thing is, the reality of life is the more talented you are, the more second chances you get. And Xavier yes. Betts is really, really, really talented.
I wonder, though, the teams that recruited him hard out of college, though, the big-time schools, he goes in the portal. I think he's – I wouldn't doubt that he's surprised on how many of them are like
– no thanks.
No thanks now, because he did good but not great, and he quit and he got in trouble.
Yeah.
So those two things, he becomes a big liability for a scholarship guy when they got other transfers
right.
and they got other recruits. So if, I don't know, Michigan offered him or whatever, you know, these big-time schools, I know he had a bunch of offers.
Right.
I bet he's shocked at
the lack of
easy access back to those schools.
For sure. Yeah, so I don't know. It'd be interesting to see.
It's not a bad thing with that kid's talent to look at taking him in, and I think what you said was really smart, is talk to the team.
I would definitely talk to the team.
Talk to his teammates. Like, is this guy somebody we want back?
Right. Do you want this guy or not?
That's the question.
Because, and the teammates, I mean, you never want to be the guy. I mean, I've told this to before. We all, and this wasn't totally the same, but like we had a guy, I won't say his name.
Yeah.
We had a guy at Kansas that was messing up a lot, and you know, he wasn't doing the right thing, and he was always kind of, he was missing practice or missing, he was late for this, late for that, always doing stuff. And like Coach Self came in and said to us, was like, you guys put it to, I'll let you guys decide. I'm going to leave. Yeah. You guys talk about it if you want to keep him on the team or not. And the hard part is when you realize in that moment, do you really want to be the guy that kicks a guy out?
Yeah.
That's a big move to make. You know, but it was heat, you know, like those, all of a sudden you get in those conversations like, can we count on this guy? Like,
I remember you telling me about this because there was times where the whole team had to run while he stood there and yes. watched because he was late. So the coach would say, all right, you keep not getting this. So
right.
you don't have to run. The whole team's running. So you guys would be running.
We'd be punished for him.
Yeah. Like, so that's what Nick, you know what? It gets a little bit easier yes. to be like.
Right. Get out of here. Get out of here. But so now we ultimately kept him, but I guess I'm saying I've been in that spot where you like, it is hard. It's easy to sit here hypothetically and be like, man, I'd tell that guy, if you're not all in, get out. It's like when you know that person, you don't even necessarily have to like that person. Now, it all depends on, here's the thing. It all depends if like this guy we're talking about, he had a good heart. Like, that's the biggest thing. Like, there's some guys that just are bad dudes. Those guys are easier to be like, get them out of here.
Yeah, yeah.
And I get the sense that Xavier Betts doesn't, like, I think he's a good guy. So yeah. My guess is he's going to be on the team. But we'll see.
I think so. But I think you got to vet it a little bit. And, yeah, it's interesting. There was actually a time where I had to, punish. Bill Callahan called in the captains, like me and Zach Bowman was a captain. Yeah. And he basically said, like, we got a couple situations. There's like a couple situations that happened like during 1 week. And he's basically like, I'm going to leave it up to you guys to decide what to do in these things.
Oh, boy.
Whatever punishment it is, whatever is going to happen this weekend, because we had a game. And he's like, you guys are deciding. And it was like, he put it on us, which was kind of weird. But they were very different situations. We had to like, we talked it out and like, and they kind of like, and we were just like, all right. And we kind of came to consensus. Like, one guy had to miss the game, and the other guy didn't have to miss any. And they were, but they were different situations.
Yes.
But like,
interesting.
We had to talk out and like you were saying though, you didn't want to be the guy. Like, it's hard to be like, sorry, we're making the decision that you don't get to play.
You're not playing in this game, or you're. We don't want you on the team.
Yeah,
or something like that. That's a.
It's
big,
hard. It's really hard.
It's a big, big decision to make, and so.
But yeah, you just gotta sit down, be rational. And you just hope that it's clear. And
you got to trust
them. If it's not clear,
yes.
Then you probably lean towards, like, don't do anything drastic.
Does this person have a good heart, and do you trust them that they are actually going to be all in on this?
Yeah.
And the other thing is, I remember at some point, like, I think it was Aaron Miles, like, basically said, like, about this. It was like, man, who are we fucking kidding? We need this guy.
Yeah.
You know, like, we needed him.
If you're good enough, Nick, if you're getting up, the yeah. better you are, the, like, more chances you
so
get.
So that's the other thing. Is
that's the rule of life, and it's not fair. It's very not fair, but that is how the world works.
It's 100% how the world works. Okay, a couple. We'll bounce through a couple things. We're about 40, 45 minutes into this thing, and we'll get out of here. I got an email from Ryan, and I wanted to kind of pick your brain on this. He said, Nick, do you think the Nebraska fan base is able to handle a long-term rebuild with the football program? Rule has a long-term contract, and several of the recruits seem to be more developmental projects, but I just have this fear that if we'd happen to start the year 2-2 or something, that this fan base will just turn completely inside out. It's a good question, and I'll kind of expand on it to you. How do you kind of size up with the fans, their patience, their excitement, and their expectations? Because you have to weigh all of those things. Yeah. Because, like, I actually don't think the fans are going to be overly patient with Matt Rhule. I just worry that if Rhule doesn't win fairly quickly, now I don't know what that means if you ask me to what does fairly quickly mean. I just fear that the apathy will set in sooner than you think.
I think that's right. I think our fans' patience was given to Scott Frost.
All of it. Literally all.
And we
of
all
it.
Said so. We gave the gift to Scott Frost. Right. We said, you're the native son. You've earned the right that if you come here, we're going to give you as much time as you need.
Right.
What that meant was 4 years and three games.
Yes.
and you know what? It was absolutely enough time.
Yes.
That was enough time. The program was not getting better. That was generous. For me, Matt Rhule's got a first year bye. Do whatever you can, Matt. Do your best. This is a changing a program, changing a culture. We got to give you that grace.
Right.
Year two, I'm probably going to be patient. I'm going to dig into my patience. If it's not good at year three, my patience will probably not be there. I mean,
right.
I will always watch, and I'm always going to be a fan. I'm saying my patience with the Matt Rhule program.
Right. No, you're being honest. Like, I want everybody listening right now really critically think about that question. Like, really think about it. I'm with you. I tend to want to say year one, like, come on, guys. Like, we can't. You're going to want to call for his head after the first year?
That's stupid.
But I'm just. Because I will say, like, I would. You made the first point that I was thinking about. I do think every last ounce of patience that this fan base had to invest was invested in Scott Frost. And when you couple that with the decade plus long part of this too of not having a ton of championships and all that stuff, so it's compounded by that. But I really think whatever patience Husker fans had in them was exhausted on Scott Frost. I'll put it to you this way. If he has the exact same first 3 years as Scott Frost, I don't know. I don't even know what I'm trying to say here. I don't think he won't get a year four.
He's not a Nebraska guy though. So I mean where that will hurt him later on if he doesn't do well. It won't matter if he does well. I mean, if he does well, you become a Nebraska guy. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like, you do well, we do the ceremony.
Yeah,
and
we welcome you into
we
the family.
Wave the wand.
Yes, right.
And we smack an in on your head.
Right.
Branded
we
in.
We brand you.
Are,
yes.
You are a Husker. So, but here's, I mean, look at this. Temple, 2-10.
Yes, I was going to
talk
about
that. 6-6, 10-4, 10-3. Baylor, 1-11, 7-6, 11-3, right? I think you, I mean, I'm looking at like it he built it, took 3 years. If we're seeing progress close to that, we'll be happy, Nick. We haven't won over five games in a long time. So if he goes 2-10, 6-6, 7-6, 8-7, we'll be fine. That's fine. The job he's got is to get us back to respectability, show progress in all these areas that we've been lacking, win games, get us to bowl games, make us competitive in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
That's respectability is where we're starting at. That's the starting place. Then it's championships and next level
the
things.
The biggest thing you said, I've always my analogy always with Frost was the whole track your package thing. On like it's nice when you order something and you can track it. Like okay, it's in South Carolina. All right, now it's in Kansas City, Missouri. It's not here yet, but you can see it getting closer.
It's out for delivery. It's out for delivery.
Out for delivery today. This is great. Like as long as that's happening, I think people's patience will remain sufficient. But the what to me, other than if we're being honest, other than the end of year one for Frost and. To me, as crazy as it's all of year four, I don't know if you saw progress. Like, I did see progress in year four with the defense. So, 2 years ago. And then the last six games. So, what we didn't get to see, we weren't seeing it like, it's coming. It's not. So, he needs to have that. Like, you got to have some, you know, incremental, tangible improvement throughout this whole ordeal. I don't know what to. I mean, we're so far away from putting a number on what it would be, but I don't know. I guess I worry about. It's hard to get a sense of how excited people are about Rhule. I don't have a great feel for that yet. I think how poorly things went with Frost has everybody a little guarded. I do think the patience aspect of it, like we were talking about, everybody exhausted all their patience with Frost, so it's hard to sense where that's at. And then because of those things, it's hard to size up what expectations are. So I just thought Ryan's question, I wanted to ask you what you thought of that. It's just kind of interesting. A couple more and we'll get out of here. Kind of popping through these. I went to, there was a handful of Fox, I was in Indianapolis on Thursday and Friday, and I went to dinner with a handful of these big Fox producers in Indianapolis. And we're talking at dinner, and they know I'm a Nebraska guy and all that stuff. And they ask me, they go, hey, man, what happened with Frost? Why didn't it work? And in a dinner setting where I can't go, well, hold on. You guys got 15 minutes for me to explain everything. How if you'd have to, like, bullet point, like, give a digestible dinner party bunch of people that you got to answer that question. How would you answer that question?
I got asked that this week at this meeting.
Okay, yeah.
And it's hard because we go so deep in so many levels that it feels like it's broad and not. It's probably not fair to Scott, right? So I'd say this, but I said something along the lines of like, you know, Scott's a really good coach that. There were some things about being a head coach that I don't think he was totally prepared for. And didn't really want to do all the time, right?
Like
some of the things Matt Rhule actually does really well, I think
Scott lacked a little bit.
Well, I don't know if I just don't know that was where his mind was. Like his energy and mind, I don't think always went to the details of being a head coach and organizing and coaching your like those are the things that I think Matt Rhule has so far shown really good at. Like Scott Frost is a really good play call. He's a really good mind.
Yes.
I think he did a good job in a lot of areas. It's just like there's a lot put on you as the head coach of Nebraska. In the Big Ten, to be at the top, you've got to be so dialed in every phase of the game. And the head coach has to he's got to live it all the time. Right. And I think Scott was like, sometimes it just seemed like, especially post, since he's been fired, more people are talking about how he just seemed a little bit wasn't as interested in some of those details. And that's fair. Like some people are just that's not what gets them excited. Scott Frost loved calling plays and brainstorming and loved that sheet in his hand.
I think you found out he's probably more of just like he wants. He's just an offensive coordinator,
and he's a gamer. I think he'll go to like Alabama or one. Like,
right.
I think he's gonna get scooped up because he's such a good play caller and such a good gamer. I mean, he really is a creative mind. I just think it's like there's so much that goes into being a head coach.
Yes.
So I think, you know, that's not totally fair because we don't see all the things Scott did,
I mean,
which was a lot. But like, it's just there's so much that you have to do right. So much. So it's a tough one to answer. But I'd say it's somewhere along that.
So when my answer at this dinner, I hit on what you said. I said I think you kind of lack some of the details that are needed to be a good head coach. But then I said three other things. A part of it was he was historically bad in close games.
Yeah.
Like terrible in close games. Whatever you want to chalk that up to, it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
How bad they were in close games. I said that he also couldn't get the offensive skill guys for his offense to really do what it needed to do. And then I said he didn't capitalize and hit when he was his hottest. Like there was a window that basically until that Ohio State game in 2019, I think.
Yeah.
Like there was like that year and a half window when he was still the hottest, one of the hottest coaches, and like it didn't go well during that time. And so then then all of a sudden you're fighting an uphill battle.
Yeah, but I think recruiting, like he could never recruit the way he probably wanted to after that.
I mean, I would say he got Wandale.
Yeah, going into 19, he
got Wandale. Like, if you really have to be real, the skill guys that he got that were difference making good enough players were Adrian Martinez and Wandale Robinson and probably Samari Toure.
Yeah. Turi's from Montana in the portal.
And like, that's what's hard. Like, so it's hard to, you could say Trey Palmer, but like, I don't know. Like
Mickey.
That's Mickey.
You got to give him credit.
He whiffed on every running back. And we've been over this. A lot of people are like, geez, you guys have talked about this. But I just want, it was interesting.
Yeah, but I think it's fair to say the guys that they got were the kind of guys you can win with always. You know, like the kind of, like their scouting was not always the greatest.
Yes.
And then close games, when we're talking about details, I think close games are details.
I think those go hand in hand.
That's most prepared in those moments with all the details of like, well, what do we do in third and six with this much time? Like,
right.
We found ways to mess those up. And right. I think there was like, oh, we work on that, but do they know it?
Right.
You know, that's the difference. Like, you know, like I think one of our friends said something like his press conference was like, well, we drilled it.
Right.
It's like, well, no, did you make them understand it?
Yes.
Like, you need to know they understand versus like, hey, we ran a two-minute drill.
Right.
Like, that's the stuff that is next level, I think, that you learn as time goes by as a coach and you get better at. And I think, like I said, this was a learning time for him. He was a young head coach, tons of success early, which was maybe wasn't good for him. He wasn't ready for this job. As much as he maybe thought he was, I think he never learned the hard lessons yet that he needed to learn.
Yes. Get you out on this one because I got another email on it. I don't have it in front of me. But basically, this email asked me, what are you most interested in seeing from Nebraska in year one under Rule? And I took it to the close games thing. I want to see if there is a discernible difference in close games with a different head coach and how it all looks.
Yeah.
So I wrote how they do in close games because even if they struggle next year and they're not great, they're going to be in some close games. I would say that, like, I'm really curious, how does Matt Rhule manage close games?
I think that's fair. Close games and the line of scrimmage on offense. I think those two things, if there's a noticeable difference there, that'd be the best indicator for things are going in the right direction.
Yes. I had some other stuff, but we're an hour in and we should probably get moving and shaking.
Randomly, did you see that tackle flipped?
Yeah.
That's too bad. That was like a big win.
That was
going
to be a big one. I know.
That was a big potential win.
He got flipped to
Nebraska.
Oklahoma, I believe.
He committed to us, then flipped like a day or two later. Like, That sucks. That was one that we like, that's a ready-made, like, you know, like 3-year starter that you can plug in. It's like,
yeah,
that's the stuff where the portal is so exciting though, for like a, for us.
That's
like,
the other thing about the patience thing of like the portal changes the
you can math on.
Yeah. You, it's not,
that's why I said 3 years, first year, second year,
there better be,
but
like
third year it's do or die. Cause you know what? The portal, you can speed. It's like if you're an NFL head coach, like it's more like NFL now where like if you have the resources and we're giving him resources,
right?
$1.2 million per coach, NIL money,
right?
Like by year three, we should see like the glimmer of like, well, we know this is worth staying with because you've got the resources, you got the portal. By year three, it should probably be. That doesn't mean like your first two games year three. I'm not like, we're going to give you year three.
Right.
And by the end of year three.
It better be like popping.
Iowa's walking off the field looking like, what has happened in Nebraska?
Yes. I mean, yeah. I mean, the reality is for most people, most coaches that get it going, it happens pretty quick. It really does, if we're being honest.
A year can be a challenge, but by year two,
by year two,
they look different.
Yes, that's, and by year three, they're usually like, holy moly.
Yeah.
So I think that's totally fair. Okay, we'll get out of here. Travel safe. Enjoy your time. We'll see if we can coordinate a... I mean, it'd be hilarious if we could do it. I don't know why it'd be funny, but it'd be funny to do it.
We'll just say a lot of like, Croiky!
Different things like that. We need to find a way to do it. Because, I mean, there's probably going to be some Nebraska football news over the next couple of weeks that we're going to have to talk about. Okay?
No, it'll be fun. It'll be fun to call from down under. And
okay. I love it. Okay. Well, there you go. That's all I got. You get out of here, okay? Go. Just get out of here.
I'm going to go see John Starks.
John Starks!
A Herd at Sports Network production.